Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama. And I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but we are on location at Russell Cave National Monument, and I'm so excited to do this on location conversation with Min Trong, who is a park guide here at Russell Cave. So welcome to the show, Min.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
This is my first time, so it's going to be exciting.
Awesome. Yay. And you're on our podcast for your first podcast. That's great. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to work at Russell Cave.
Gotcha. My name is Min, and I'm originally from Vietnam. So I moved here when I was about nine. And how I got here is it's a little bit of a long story. I went to school for electrical engineering, but during that time, I worked as a rock climbing instructor and also a outdoor trip leader, meaning what I would do is I'll take a group of students into a location like these, either for rock climbing, for canoeing, and we will camp overnight, and then we'll continue doing the activity and then leave the next day.
Yeah.
And then just from that, it kind of veered me a little bit toward the outdoorsy side.
Yeah.
And then what Ashley Seal did is my friends and I took a 10-day spring break trip out west. All the way into New Mexico, we drove all the way there. And along the way, we would stop at most of the national parks along the way. And that's when I learned about the national park system. And I just kind of fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And then one thing led to another, kind of moved up here from Florida. I'm more of a mountain person than a beach person.
Yeah.
So that's why this is perfect.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect Northeast Alabama to be this beautiful. There's canyons, there's waterfalls, there's rivers. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that we hear a lot with people who've never been to North Alabama, and then they come and they think, you know, I really had no idea that it was going to be as beautiful as it is here. And then we come and there's, you know, like you said, there's mountains, there's lakes, there's green. That's, people say that a lot. It's so green here.
And it's a lot rockier than what most people would expect.
Yeah.
Because they all thought it was like, oh, it's super flat, just farmlands everywhere, corn everywhere. Yeah. But like you said, there's a lot more natural, scenic locations and features.
Yeah. That's so cool. So what happened to the electrical engineering part?
Well, the one good thing is that I actually got my degree. Now that's in the back pocket. That became plan B.
Yeah.
So this became plan A.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of riding the boat and see where I float.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Riding the boat and see where I float. I love that.
That seems to be my, I guess, life choices so far.
Yeah.
It's kind of going with the flow.
Yeah. Well, and it also makes a difference when you're doing something that you've fallen in love with and that you enjoy. And I mean, this is a beautiful office to have in a cave.
Exactly. That's usually what I tell people is that not too many people can say that they have a cave as an office.
Yes.
Or at least walking distance.
Yeah.
From an office.
That is so cool. I love that. And it's also good to have a backup plan. So
exactly.
Good for you. Well, Russell Cave is unique because it demonstrates 10,000 years of human history. So tell us how the cave was formed and who the first people to use it were.
So I have no idea when the cave was formed. That might be thousands of years ago. It might have been millions of years ago.
Yeah.
But before, where we're standing now is actually used to be underground.
Oh, okay.
And it used to be a gigantic sinkhole that eventually collapsed, exposing the openings that you see now.
Oh.
So I don't know how long ago that was, millions of years, thousands of years.
Yeah.
But that's how this cave revealed itself. The roof collapsed and then revealing that opening.
Yeah.
So in the background that you hear that water running, that is the left side of the opening if you're looking toward the cave. And then on the right hand side, it's a lot more shallow and it's a lot higher from the ground. So you're not prone to flooding while you're living in this right space.
Oh, okay.
So you have high ground and then you have fresh running water. It's like a five-star hotel thousands of years ago. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And the first people who used this cave continuously is, we don't have a name for them. We usually refer them to their time period or their prehistoric time period.
Yeah.
And those are the Paleo-Indian people.
That is so cool, though. I mean, you think about like shelter and running water. I mean, those are two necessities that we have, right?
And you said it's green all around, so plenty of food, plenty of wild games, plenty of wild plants that are edible.
Yeah, so a lot of resources here. So tell us a little bit about some of the time periods that you you mentioned the paleo people. So what are some of the other people, the time periods here?
So from order of oldest to, I guess, youngest, the paleo Indian are the first, and then archaic time period comes after, and then the woodlands, and then Mississippian. Okay. So to break it down even further, on our brochure, it says that the Paleo-Indian time period is from about 14,000 BCE to about 10,000 BCE.
Wow.
And then archaic picks up at around 10 to 9,000 to about, I want to say, 6 or 4,000. And then woodlands is from 4 to about 1. And then Mississippian is going to be from 1,000 BCE. And then leading into our timeline a little bit, in about like the 1500s.
Okay, that is so cool. So, I mean, what was the oldest that you said? Like, that's mind-boggling to me, that many years BC.
Yeah, exactly. So when we say like BCE or BC, that is that number plus our time that we're in now, so plus 2000.
Gotcha.
So when you say 10,000 BCE or BC, that is 10,000 plus the 2000s that we have written language.
Yep. Gotcha. I mean, it's just hard to wrap my mind around that. I mean, I can barely think back to, a few hundred years ago, much less thousands and thousands of years ago.
So that time, the longer that it is harder for people to grasp.
Yeah.
Because you can't experience that.
Yeah, that is so cool. Well, tell us about some of the wildlife in the area and how the animals use the cave.
So the one animals that we have here that are quite frequent are deer.
Okay.
Snakes, both venomous and non-venomous.
Mm-hmm.
We have bats, beaver, otter, your usual rodents, which are chipmunks, squirrels, mice, rats, moles even. But other than those, we also have bobcats and coyotes. Mm-hmm. And the rare one of those are the black bears. So there around the area, but they tend to use the area and then move on. They don't tend to stay in this area specifically.
Yeah. That is so cool. I had no idea there were black bears. Mm-hmm. Do they come down from the Smoky Mountains? Is that where maybe they originated? Or
so they there's a healthy population at Little River Canyon National Preserve.
Really?
Which is about an hour and 3 minutes away from here. And that's on Lookout Mountain. So I think some of their bears wandered here.
Okay.
But I don't have the knowledge of where they are coming from to our side of the mountain.
I had no idea there were bears at Little River Canyon National Preserve. Okay, I might need to do a podcast about bears then.
Gotcha. There's there's a lady over there that her job specifically is to tag the bears that are there. And she would take volunteers with her to tag the bears. So if you volunteer, you might be able to pet some bear cubs.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I need to be a volunteer for tagging bears.
Yeah, it's quite popular. I think once you sign up as a volunteer for the National Park System or for Pacific Parks that you're close by, usually you get to do a lot of cool things that people normally don't think about.
That is so cool. So have you ever seen a bear here?
I have not, but the maintenance ranger that was actually staying on site, we have ranger housing on site.
Mm-hmm.
And the residents that was there at that time saw a bear, one out of his entire, the first bear actually heard that's actually on a mountain. He saw it.
Yeah.
And his dog kind of chased it off a little bit, but we have not heard or seen of a bear ever since.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, that is
like
so
I said,
cool.
It's quite rare.
Okay. Do you ever catch any wildlife, maybe taking naps or just chilling in the cave here?
I myself have not taken a nap inside of the cave. And I've actually removed lots of critters.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting ones are the rattlesnakes. So back when we first reopened since the pandemic, there was an explosion of wildlife because it was the lack of people.
Mm-hmm.
So the snakes, the rodents, everything was coming out.
Yeah.
So they were seen more frequently throughout the parks. And my first week starting working here, I had to remove my first rattlesnakes. From the visitor center, because it was right in front of the door.
Oh.
So I was warning visitors about, hey, when you hike, keep an eye out, because we do have rattlesnake sightings. And as soon as I say that, the visitor that I was talking to pointed toward our back door and says, is that what you're talking about? And it was about a 4-footer crawling right across the back door. So I was like, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I just took hooks and then threw them back in the woods.
Yikes. Oh, wow. Yeah, I bet the wildlife probably did enjoy the people-free part of the pandemic a little bit. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they seem to like it because they keep returning.
Yeah.
Well, it is their home, so we're in their space, technically.
We're treading on their territory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So are visitors allowed in the cave?
So no. The answer, the short answer is no. And the long answer is that technically, yes, if you get permission. Let's say you are a scientist or a researcher from maybe another park, or you're doing something relating to our water source or for our, I guess, biodiversity inside of the cave, like noting it down or kind of making a list out of it, then you can ask our superintendent to get permission to go inside the cave.
Okay.
So two examples are those. There's a hydrologist up in Mammoth Cave that does water stuff. I don't know the science behind it. I just know that I was allowed to help him go through the cave because I have caving experience. So he would go in there, do his thing, and then I'll go along, and then I would lug the equipment or help him put up some of the stuff. But visitor, the answer is no. The short answer is no.
Yeah. But regular people can't go in.
Exactly.
You need to be a scientist. So.
Yeah. The very interesting thing about that is once upon a time, about a decade ago, they used to let regular people go inside with their own gears, of course. So this cave is a wild cave.
Okay.
There's no walkway. There's no structure on the inside. So when you go inside, you need three sources of light. You need your helmet, your food, your water. Basically anything prepare you to anything will happen in that cave.
Yeah.
So you need caving gears to go inside.
Okay. But do you know how far it goes back?
So 7.5 miles have been mapped.
Oh, wow.
There are other connections that are too narrow for people to squeeze in, but water can get through.
Yeah.
So 7.5 miles has been mapped, and the route that we take tour for those research trips are about 2 miles, I want to say. Because there is an opening that is accessible a couple of miles down, and it goes into a property that is private. And when we go through there, we have to let the owner know, hey, there are going to be some muddy people popping out of your entrance, so he's not going to have a heart attack when you hear noises in that cave.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Like, everything sounds weird in a cave.
Yeah. Wow, that's really cool, though. 7 miles.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I like caves that are very open, but when you start getting a little tight, I start getting a little claustrophobic. So.
Gotcha. Luckily, I don't have that problem, or else I would not be helping.
Yes, and you probably wouldn't have a whole lot of cave experience if you were like that either, so.
Yeah, I would say that, yep.
And you mentioned when we were walking up here how unusual it is for the water to be flowing into the cave. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So the water source that is going inside of our cave is from a waterfall that is up the road. So that's where the gravity is pulling it down and heading toward our cave. So it's from a higher ground source. So this is why the water is flowing in. Most of the time when people see a cave, that source is on the other end. And they only know the out entrance to where water is flowing out of it.
Yeah.
But ours is a little bit interesting. And it's a little bit of a optical illusion for the folks that visit here. I hear a lot of visitors say that, is your water going up? Like, as in, like, it's going higher and then into the cave. But it's just an optical illusion, standing from the boardwalk, looking down.
So it's really going down, but it's going in. Cool.
And it might be going up. It's just that water pressure that's coming from that waterfall is strong enough to go up that ramp or off that slope and then into the cave.
Okay. What's the name of the waterfall that flows into this?
It's a private waterfall, and I don't think we have a name for it.
Gotcha. Because we have a North Alabama waterfall trail, and I'm thinking, you know, we might need this on there, or it might already be on our trail. So
no, I think it's on private land.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's really cool, though, because, yeah, when you said that, and I started looking at the water, and I thought, you know, that's true. I'm thinking back to other water sources, and it's usually, like, coming out of something like that. So that's cool. So has Russell Cave been entirely excavated?
Entirely in a way to where the cave shelter on the right-hand side has been excavated. I don't know what to extent is the left side has been excavated, because as I mentioned, there's water flowing on the left side. So anything that was left behind would have been washed into the cave and potentially lost forever. And since the right side is higher from the ground and it's not prone to flooding, there's a lot more layers to go through. And they did excavate the majority of the cave on that right side, and they found over 2 tons of artifacts.
Oh, wow.
So majority of them were stone points, but they also found bone fragments of animals and tools. They found a lot of pottery shards and a couple of imprints that are interesting, like fabric imprints.
Oh, wow.
Because the fabric itself is already gone. It's already deteriorated.
Yeah.
So the imprint is left in the mud or the clay or whatever section of that excavation is.
Wow, that is so cool, though. And I mean, just the to be able to see that intricate detail of fabric being imprinted. Wow, that's really neat.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. The one bone artifact that I want to mention that is really cool is a bone fish hook that they found.
Okay.
So there are three main excavations has been done. The first one is actually by amateur archaeologists. They were actually putting up power lines up on this mountain long ago, but they were interested in archaeology, so they got permission from the landowner to go inside of this cave, Russell Cave, to just check around to see what they can find. And within 9 feet, they found a bonefish hook, turtle shells, and a dome point. And if anyone knows stone points, a dome point is quite old, about 9,000 BCE.
Oh, wow.
So just within that 9 feet layer, they found really, really nice and old artifacts.
That's when they realized
that it is way bigger than they thought, or way older than what they have thought.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat. So do you have a lot of artifacts then in your visitor center?
Yeah. So in our main visitor center, we have a museum. And in that museum, there's text and also artifacts on display. But unfortunately, right now, our main one is, or main visitor center is under construction.
Okay.
They are gutting the inside and then redoing it and also expanding the museum a little bit.
Okay.
So all the artifacts are now in storage until that main visitor center is done.
Okay.
And then we put it back on the display.
Okay. Cool. So we can come back and see those then.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be by the end of this year.
Okay. So what is the best way then for visitors to experience Russell Cave?
I would say the first thing you can do is stop by the visitor center. That's when you get your initial questions out of the way, as in like what you expect, where can you go. And then from there, you can walk head out to the cave, see the cave shelter. And then we also have a 1.2 mile hike, a nature hike that goes up the mountains and then loop back down. So that's the best way if you're a birder. That would be the best trail to see some nice birds. Also some other wildlife. And then if you have the time, you can ask one of the rangers if there's more than one available to come out and also do a live demonstrations of the prehistoric tools and weapons.
Oh, cool.
And those involve fire starting using friction, using the atlato or the spear thrower, and also shooting bow and arrows.
Oh, cool. And you mentioned that you did all of these things this morning with a school group that came through?
Yeah, there were about 30 eighth graders and two teachers that came by this morning, and I did all of those. I was lucky with the fire for one group, but I couldn't get it for the first group to where it was chillier in the morning, so I haven't warmed up yet.
Yeah.
So for the second group, I was finally warmed up, and I was able to get that fire.
Yeah, that's cool. That is really cool. So what is the best way for people to support the cave? Like, how can we be a supporter of Russell Cave?
So the best way to support Russell Cave is to keep it, I don't want to say the way that it is, but keep it clear of any unnecessary addition, as in trash. Just because water do flow inside of our cave, anything that's in the water will get into the system. And then if it's big and if it doesn't belong there, it's going to affect the whole ecosystem that's inside the cave.
Yeah.
So there's technically two sources of water. One is going to be that waterfall that I was talking about. And also there's the other divergent that is called Dry Creek. And we call it Dry Creek because usually it's dry.
Yeah.
And it's usually rain fed. And that's when tires, trash, all of that get washed into the cave. So once a year during like early spring or maybe early in the summer, we'll try to have a creek cleanup day to where we'll haul trash out, we'll haul the tires out and try to keep it nice and clean.
Okay.
But the best way is just be nice to your environment, because that is my passion, is to preserve the natural and historical resources.
Yeah. And we partner with Leave No Trace, so we always encourage, you know, people to follow those seven principles of, you know.
And you can use that seven principles or that Leave No Trace for anywhere you visit.
Absolutely. Well, tell us, what is the most unexpected thing that you've experienced while working at Russell Cave?
I think I mentioned it before, but the snakes, definitely. I was not expecting to be a snake wrangler when I signed up for the job. It was nowhere in the description, but it was fun. It was also an eye-opener. It was my first time seeing a venomous snake up close.
Yeah.
And removing it was just like, wow, this thing is actually pretty heavy and deadly.
Yeah.
So, but that's the most unexpected thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's been quite, I don't want to say normal, but I guess part of the norm.
Yeah. Okay. So when you put park guide and snake wrangler
That is actually on my resume. I did mention that.
Hey, that's a good conversation starter. Like, what do you mean by this?
Yep. And then I can go into my whole spiel. And then, so I'm a big fan of snakes.
Yeah.
So I don't mind interacting with them.
Yeah.
Most people, I think I hear this a lot. The only good type of snakes are dead.
Yeah.
That's what I hear a lot.
I hear that a lot too. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of sad because they're free pest control.
Mm-hmm.
They keep the mice and rodents away.
Yeah.
So they're quite nice.
True.
And then if you're talking about the king snakes, they eat venomous snakes.
Mm-hmm.
So not all snakes are bad. Yeah. Some snakes are helping you in many ways.
Yeah. I always say, like, I'm not crazy about snakes, but I am fascinated by them.
Okay.
So I don't really want to be super up close and personal with any, but if I see one far away, I'm like, oh, wow, okay, that's pretty cool.
And
let's move away.
That's usually the best way to enjoy a snake is from afar, from a nice distance.
Yeah. Just don't tempt it. Don't try to provoke it at all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, we always ask our Facebook followers what questions that they want asked. And so our winning question this week is, are there any rare plants or wildlife that can be found here? Like anything that's super rare?
I guess I do know one, and it's called a pseudo scorpion.
Oh.
And it's called that because it doesn't have a stinger, and it's not the size of a regular scorpion. It's actually almost microscopic. And we have exactly one species documented and have in a bottle, because I don't know who saw this species while they're in that cave doing those research.
Yeah.
And they actually caught it. So we have one documented pseudo scorpion that is in the cave. I'm sure there's others, but it's so small that it's so hard to see.
Yeah.
So kudos to whoever that is
that
found that species.
So what could you compare like the size to, like a penny, smaller than a penny, smaller than a dime?
Ooh, I would say closer to a gnat.
Oh.
Like, yes.
How?
In between a gnat and a fly.
Wow.
And it's not like colored either. It's clear because it's a cave species.
Yeah.
So it lacks that pigmentation since you're in a cave for so long. So it's a clear, opaque, floaty thing in the water that is about a gnat to a fly size.
And they found this. They have better eyesight than I do.
So I don't know how they did it. Either like they scooped like a sample and just got super lucky.
Yeah.
Or did someone actually saw it while they were looking in the water and it just scooped it up.
Wow.
But either way, that is incredible.
That is incredible. That's quite a find there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us. It's been so exciting to be standing literally inside Russell Cave talking to you. So thanks for being my guest.
I'm glad for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, before we go, tell our listeners where they can find Russell Cave on social media.
Ooh, on social media, if you search Russell Cave National Monument on either Instagram and Facebook, I think we'll show up. I'm pretty sure we'll show up. Now, if you just search up Russell Cave, there's going to be other entities that have the same name.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, if you follow up by National Monument or NPS, we should show up.
Okay. And your website, how can people find you on the internet?
So for the website, it's going to be nps.gov/RUCA.
Okay.
So RUCA. And RUCA is that our acronym for Russell Cave.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And North Alabama's social platforms are linked in the description. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next time with more about North Alabama adventures.